This is Jim Inkster, and you are listening to Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. Emails go to talk@talklouisiana.org. The remarkable Robin Dow is producing, and in studio to begin our show is Brian Dubriel. He is a business person in our community, a financial advisor, but he also is a resident of the Garden District, City Park. He lives near City Park. And like many who are in close proximity, he's not all that enthused about changing what has been a nice, livable environment for him and his family. And he is here because Jenny Peters, who represents those who say, look, we could do this bigger and better, and we need to have a vision for the future and perhaps spruce up the park, do something. And then when you get into something, it becomes a discussion about what. But at this point, the park is about to celebrate its 100th anniversary as a golf course. 1926 was when it opened. It's on the National Register of Historic Places. And Brian is here, and good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for having me. I appreciate being here.
And you have written about this going back at least 10 years about why you believe that things should stay largely the way they are. Why?
Well, there are a number of reasons. And first thing I want to do is just let everybody know that it's for the past 15 years or so, it seems as though if you're not in favor of tearing things down and rebuilding and paving, that you in some way, shape, or form are not visionary and not progressive. And nothing could be farther from the truth. The folks that I talk to think that we are extremely progressive and extremely visionary. You know, if you think about BREC, and I don't have firm numbers here because I got called into this on pretty short notice, but I think BREC has something in the neighborhood of 175 parks in East Baton Rouge Parish, and I need somebody to fact check me on that. Some include a botanical garden, I think, at Independence Park. There's a swamp at Blue Bonnet. There's a water park at Independence and so forth and so on. So if you think, Jim, about the ideal park, I think it would include tennis courts, croquet, maybe a dog park, maybe a playground, maybe a picnic area, access to walking, running, and biking trails, perhaps even an art gallery, a reception and meeting facility. Splash pool, and even access to a beautiful children's museum. And all of those things already exist at Brooks City Park, including the historic golf course.
877-217-5757. Jenny said something which may very well be true, that if you were to put this to a vote of the parish, the vote would probably be one way. And if you put it to those who live in the district and live in the area, it would, my guess is that most of the residents would not want substantial change. But living is evolving, and sometimes things can be done better. If you were to make some changes, which ones would you make?
Well, that's an interesting question. So as I understand it, Brook City Park encompasses approximately 154 acres. I was told years ago that 26 of those acres was the golf course. I'm told maybe it's 40 acres now. So there is ample capacity to put additional amenities there. Here's the interesting thing.
We already have a dog park in that area.
We have a dog park. We have tennis courts. We have croquet. We have a little splash park. All of those things already exist. And the interesting thing about this is that we are in the process now, after 10 years of waiting, of developing the lakes with running trails, biking trails, water amenities, places where people can go park and walk and so forth. So a lot of that already exists. And what I don't understand is why can't you encompass a historic 9-hole golf course in that larger entire area? Why is it, do you have to destroy that golf course to add additional amenities?
Again, 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. Holly in the Garden District says the numbers for those who actually use the golf course have gone up in recent years. I think the the numbers prove her out. Is that right?
Yeah, according to information that from BREC, you know, there were 12,000 rounds played in 2016, and in 2020 there were 18,000 rounds played. That increased to 22,000 in 2021, and City Park is on pace to see 25,000 rounds of golf played on that park, on that course. And you know, the opponents of tearing the golf course down say, well, Webb Park is in very close proximity. The problem is Webb Park is overplayed as it is. The greens at Webb Park are small, and if you add an additional 25,000 rounds on that course, you can't support it. So the idea that we can close this park, at this golf course, and absorb those rounds elsewhere is just not factual.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. Let's go to Allison downtown. Allison, you're on with Brian Dubriel. Good morning. Nope, we lost Allison. Let's go to Jim on I-12. Jim, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, gentlemen. It's all about gentrification. It's all about the continued whitening of the area down there. And I'm sorry, you know, that increase in golf use, that is people of color who are seriously just discovering the sport. And there isn't another choice for them at all.
All right. Well, obviously, there are people of all demographic persuasions who are playing that golf course, and they've been doing so for 97 years, and in recent time, it's picked up. But could the golf course, Ralph McAllister, your friend Brian, calls it a crappy golf course, could it be made better? I walk that area, and at times, I hate to say it, but when nobody's on the course, I actually walk on the course to get to other parts of the neighborhood. But could it be made better if a little TLC were put into the golf course?
Well, I think they are improving the golf course, and I think the fact that it's so well played perhaps contributes to Rolf's definition of crappy, and I'm not sure what that definition is. I'm not sure what he means by that, but the golf course is extremely well played and played often. So sure, and here's the thing about that. People pay money to play rounds of golf.
Mm-hmm.
So that golf course, as I understand it, and I could be wrong, again, somebody needs to fact check me on this, is if not profitable, at least breaking even. So the money can be used to continue to enhance it and continue to improve it. Absolutely.
Donna in Mid-City. Hello, Donna. Good morning.
Hi. I think if it's worked for 100 years, it's proven itself. Just to keep it like it is. I would enhance the pedestrian crossing, though, on Dalrymple. Thank you.
All right. It is a bit dangerous at times when people are moving across Dalrymple from one side to the other. But and of course, Jenny brought up the train, which
the train
is out of place. And you hear it. I hear it, too.
You hear the train, Jim?
Yeah, I hear the train, yeah. But actually, I kind of like trains, so it doesn't bother me, but it bothers some people.
Well, I can tell you, it bothers the heck out of me. And the train is a whole different subject for that park, okay? That is something that we could talk about for an hour. But and let me just state, I'm not a golfer. I don't play golf. I do walk around the golf course, and I ride my bike. I've got a 7.5-mile trek around the LSU Lakes and through the campus that I ride the bike. And there are some very dangerous areas that you have to traverse on that path. And that's why I'm very excited about the Greater Lakes Project, okay? And it just seems to me that it doesn't have to be all or none. It doesn't have to be we're going to upgrade and enhance City Park by tearing out a historic golf course. That seems like a very narrow, narrow vision.
Bill in Kenilworth, you're on the air with Brian Dubriel, who is advocating keeping City Park as is. Bill, good morning.
Good morning, Jim. Jim, I wanted to add to the list of amenities at City Park that BREC and the Baton Rouge Gallery are planning in the planning stages for a contemporary arts museum that would abut the present Baton Rouge Gallery along the slope that used to overlook the swimming pool.
Okay. And the Baton Rouge Gallery is a treasure. I would hope that whatever is done, that they wouldn't mess with that. Some people, of course, probably see it as an old building that has seen better days, Brian.
Well, some people tear old buildings down, Jim, and without giving any thought or consideration to the historic value of them. But let's talk, if you can. I think Jenny mentioned something about commercial development. Did she not?
She did, but she wasn't advocating it. She was just saying it needs to be looked at as a possibility. But, of course, that brings a whole new aspect of conversation to things. I think she's just saying a coffee shop would be nice. But we'll be back in 89.3 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with Brian Dubriel, who is a resident of, I would say, City Park. I don't think I'm sharing any confidential information, but he lives within yards of City Park. And if you'd like to get in on the conversation, 877-217-5757. Now, coffee shop. What would be so bad about having a coffee shop near the gallery and that sort of thing?
Well, there is already a coffee shop, correct? I mean, isn't there one near the flower shop right there on Perkins Road in Boyd's Corner? But here's the thing, Jim. Here's the thing. That plan, and I need to keep these answers brief, but the plan, the Lakes plan, called for a coffee shop right there at the end of that golf course. And I went to Braff and I said, only in Baton Rouge would you want to put a coffee shop overlooking what is soon to be an 8-lane interstate with all of its noise, air pollution, Jake braking, sirens, et cetera, when you can go to Womack Park on the other end of that lake and have a regal, to use a word I've heard you use before, view of sorority houses and expanses of lake. So why would you put that coffee shop overlooking the interstate? Only in Baton Rouge.
Okay. Mark on Perkins Road. Mark, you're on the air with Brian Dubriel. Hi, Mark.
Yes. Yes. Here's my big thing. Baton Rouge has closed 4 to 5 golf courses down in the last 10 to 15 years. And City Park is a great place to take kids. Historical golf course. There's a lot of play on it. It pays for itself. If they turn this into a park, it's not going to pay for itself. So I really think this is something that they're starting just to try to get people riled up. And I just pray that it doesn't happen.
All right. Brian, you want to bite on that?
Well, I agree with him, but again, what I want to make sure that people understand is we're not opposed to change and improvements and enhancements. Our deal is, why can't that change, improvements, and enhancements include the historic 9-hole golf course?
877-217-5757. There's still time to get in under the wire with Brian Dubriel, who is a resident, concerned citizen, not happy about proposed changes to City Park. Jolie in Port Allen. Hi, Jolie.
Hi. I'm calling in this morning because I do use, I'm very familiar with that area. I use City Park a ton. I walk the LSU lakes at least 3 to 4 times a week, and I'm all about progression and advancement and improvement. And I have noticed, and maybe it's due to Breck City Park, now they're turning over, you know, they're making money, things are getting better, but in the last year, they have changed the service that provides the lawn care. The golf course is maintained to such a better degree. They have added concrete walking paths throughout, well, actually for the golf course, but now that allows people a walking path so they do not have to walk on the highway and the streets of Baton Rouge if they want to walk outside of golf hours. And also, they've got almost now, I can't speak 100%, I'm not factual, I just know what I see when I walk, they have an irrigation system. And I'm hearing from tons of people who play golf that City Park now is way better than Webb Park because you're playing on dirt at Webb Park.
All right. Webb is an 18-hole course, but City Park has been around 97 years. Tom Bendelow, who at the time was like the Jack Nicklaus of golf designers, He designed it. They put a statue of him right there on in the middle of the course.
Carved out of a tree.
Yeah, I see him get hit every time.
Absolutely.
but anyway, Jolie, thanks for sharing the information. Mitch on Perkins. Hello, Mitch. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning, guys. Do I need to turn my radio off here?
Yes, please. We don't want feedback. Mitch knows the drill. Go for it.
Okay. So, first of all, I'm going to give Breck a big tip of the hat because, you know, there's an old saying out there, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. City Park ain't broke. It's doing great. I've been out there playing golf out there for the past 42 years. And they continue to make improvements to it. And it serves so much of the community around there, not just, you know, the average everyday golfer, but high schools come play out there. They have lots of, you know, adult leagues. They have the first tee program comes over there every once in a while. And the USGA right now is making a big push towards the Play 9 agenda. You know, go out there, you got time to play 9, but may not have time to play 18. So in my mind, I think, you know, we'd be looking a little bit regressive if we took that golf course away from the general public. Just my opinion.
All right. Thank you, sir.
I agree.
Okay. Hampton Peel writes, I do not know, but I suspect that this golf course is the oldest continuously operated integrated public golf course in the United States. Someone please do the research. It is on the National Register of Historic Places, but I'm told if you want to make a change, that really doesn't matter. But it is treasured by many, and of course, there are those who say, look, we're not talking about a big change, we just want an incremental change. Bill Huey, a few days ago, sent me some ideas, and he was doing this tongue-in-cheek. He was saying, we need to have a pickleball course, we need to have a badminton course, a cornhole. The Raising Cane's Dog Park occupies too much space, he writes, and should be trimmed to create four spaces for cornhole so that dog owners can play while keeping an eye on their pooches. He says, we should have a shooting range sponsored by Jim's Firearms. Every country town needs a shooting range, and City Park is an ideal central location where people can release some tension.
Some tension. Well, some of that may be tongue-in-cheek, but think about it. Think about the pickleball craze that's sweeping the nation right now. Now, here's the thing. You don't have to close a golf course or shut that golf course down. There's ample, again, extra acreage to put cornhole and to put pickleball. Pickleball would probably be a great addition to that park. I don't know about the shooting range. I'm not certain about that. But
he says we could also have axe throwing, which would be a fine complement to shooting and archery. An archery range sponsored by Bowie Outfitters. And well, anyway, I think we know. And, of course, the coffee shop.
Yeah, overlooking the interstate.
On the green, on the green of hole number 4.
Right.
That's what Bill writes. 877-217-5757 in our remaining moments with Brian Dubriel, who's a concerned citizen. Now, there was this summit meeting a few days ago involving city leaders. Did anything, based on what you've learned, come from that?
Well, I wasn't informed about the summit meeting that took place.
Well, I think Corey Wilson, who's head of BREC, he met with some people who want change, and he's also going to meet with people who don't want change. And right now,
and Jim, I want to be careful about the don't want change. It's not that we don't want change. The change can occur with the golf course still remaining as is. So I don't want to paint us as non-visionary and non-progressive. We're not that at all.
Well, one of the wisest people I know comes on our show once a week, Mark Ballard, who used to live in the Garden District and did so for about 30 years or so, maybe a little more than that. He's now living in Washington, but I don't think he has a horse in this race. And Mark is a longtime resident of the Garden District. Did you like City Park as is, or do you think it can be revamped and improved?
I always liked City Park as it was, and I was always afraid of the revamping and improvement, which, you know, I mean, I guess it could do, but what my fear was is that they would start, you know, putting up, you know, fast food outlets.
Yeah, you're fading on us a bit, but we definitely would, I think, get some real pushback if suddenly we had Popeyes in the middle of City Park, but
Well, here's what I want you to think about. Think of what is your scenic impression of Perkins Road between the overpass and Poets Row and Terrace, let's say. What is your scenic impression of that, Jim?
Well, I like it. I think it's a beautiful place.
It is. Yeah. Now, what is your scenic impression of the same exact same road in front of, say, Perkins Row?
Well, I think Perkins Row is great too, but it was built in a place that was conducive for that, and I wouldn't think Perkins Row would fly where City Park is.
I don't either, but if you start bringing in commercial development, because I understand BRAF, the chamber, the housing group, we're all involved in that summit, and if you start bringing in construction, you're going to have to bring in additional infrastructure.
Well, thank you, Brian Dubriel. This is a story that has legs, as they say, and we will continue to follow it, and we appreciate your contributions to our show today. Mark Ballard, who, of course, is now the nation's Capitol Bureau Chief for the Advocate and the Picayune, he's on deck to talk about what's going on 1 month before the October 14th primary. We're back with more Talk Louisiana after this. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing. The number is 877-217-5757. Mark Ballard joining us from the Beltway. 1 month from today, we'll be casting ballots in the Louisiana governor's election. We're 30 days away from the October 14th primary. And recent polls indicate that the most likely scenario is a runoff between Sean Wilson and Jeff Landry, but I also have been privy to what people are reporting who are inside campaigns, and that the candidate who's moving right now is Hunter Lundy. Now, whether he can catch one of the two and get in a runoff is questionable, but he is moving, and Mark Ballard, I think many thought Stephen Waguespack would be the one who would be in third place and moving upward, but the polls indicate that it's Lundy who's running as an independent, which would be somewhat historic for our state if somehow, some way, he got elected governor of Louisiana, or even if he runs a close race.
Yeah, that would be.
Okay, Mark, I think we've got. There you go.
We're better?
Yeah, we're better. We're better.
Because you're coming through fine. I think that the something new. However, we have had Democrats and Republicans who ran as Democrats and Republicans, but kind of were third-party candidates as well. I mean, de facto third-party candidates.
Well, we have a primary in 1 month, and as stated earlier, we don't vote in Louisiana, and it's true in some other states as well, in the same numbers for governor's elections as we do for presidential elections. Now, some states have it on the same day, but we don't. And there are those who believe that we might just be better off if we ran all the statewide elected officials, all the state legislatures at the same time we vote for president. That would be quite an election, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it wouldn't. I think we would get far more people participating in the election as well. So, I mean, I don't know how that would all send out, but we've had presidential elections, the last couple of ones that kind of went for the most conservative candidate on the ballot at the time. So maybe that's what.
Well, I am looking at the presidential election of 2020, and in Utah, Donald Trump beat Joe Biden in a small state by 305,000 votes. Now, he beat Joe Biden in a little bigger state, Louisiana, by 400,000 votes. And the senator from Utah, who's been the biggest thorn in the Republican ranks in Donald Trump's side, Mitt Romney, announced yesterday he will not seek re-election. Now, he may not be seeking it for various reasons, but one is that he would have a very difficult time, I suspect, of being re-elected after opposing Trump. And that brings us to William Morgan Cassidy. He's up in 2026. Did he dig his political grave when he voted for the impeachment of Donald Trump?
Well, a lot of people are saying that. Every time I write about Cassidy, I must get a bunch of a half a dozen trolls writing about, you know, why do I even care about Cassidy in there? So there is that kind of argument. Then there's also the argument that I believe that Mitt Romney made it yesterday, and is, you know, that the adults in the Republican Party are going to be taking over again. You know, that it, this is all kind of, you know, goes in cycles. And so, I don't know. I mean, he's right. They all do go in cycles.
Well, right now, the Republican cycle is, it's running heavily toward the former president as the nominee next year. And, of course, the Democrats look like they're going to renominate the president of the United States, Joseph Biden, and we'll have two guys who are extremely old by standards of yesteryear. And we mentioned 1960, John Kennedy was 43 and Richard Nixon was 47. If the, it goes according to the way it looks like it'll go, next year Trump will be 78 and Biden will be almost 82. So we've got this case in which certainly we treasure knowledge and wisdom, but both of these guys have seen better days. Today, Frank Bruni in the New York Times writes, "I'm not claiming that Biden and Trump project the same degree of vigor. I have eyes and ears. Trump talks louder and faster than Biden does and moves with a thudding force. He's like a freight train to Biden's cable car, a big bulbous tuba to Biden's tremulous piccolo. Listening to Biden, I want a volume knob I can turn up. Listening to Trump, I crave nonsense-canceling headphones." So there we are. We're headed for a rematch, and now the Republicans on Capitol Hill, Mark, look like they're going to vote to impeach. At least many of them will. Whether a majority of the House will is a question, but they're going to try to impeach Joe Biden. What do you make of this?
Boy, that is the talk of the of Capitol Hill. Senator Romney, the one other thing, what he said yesterday was that the Donald Trump controls the Republican Party now. And so that was, and he suggested that younger people get involved in politics. So, but the issue on the impeachment is kind of up in the air in that they're not even sure. One reason why Speaker McCarthy did not take a vote to start it, as he promised that they would, was that he likely would have lost that vote because there are many Republicans who come from Republican representatives who come from districts that voted for Biden that are very wary about getting involved in impeachment right now. So there's it's not a sure thing that the Republican majority would vote to impeach the president right now. So, but they are going to continue on with investigations.
Yes, they are. Now, yesterday, Bob Mann said on this show that if it went to a vote of the full House, he fully expected the entire Louisiana delegation, with the exception of Troy Carter, to vote for impeachment. That would mean Garrett Graves, Steve Scalise, Julia Letlow, Clay Higgins, Mike Johnson. They would all vote for impeachment. And Johnson has already basically said he will. He's all for this investigation. The congressman from the Shreveport area, he is a member of that Freedom Caucus, isn't he?
I don't think he is, actually, but he is a member of leadership. He is a member of the Judiciary Committee, which is one of the three House committees that are going to be looking, doing the investigations. And just a few minutes ago, he was saying that that bribery is an impeachable offense according to the U.S. Constitution. Representative Higgins said, tweeted out as soon as Speaker McCarthy made the announcement, just tweeted out, impeach him. And he is going to be on the Oversight Committee that is one of the three committees that are looking into this investigating impeachment. So the other Republicans, Julia Letlow has not said anything about where she stands on this and what she thinks about this. She's kept quiet and not really answered calls about it. But both Mr. Graves and Mr. Scalise have pointed out that there seems to be a lot of smoke surrounding this, around what has been uncovered already by the various House committees.
Today in the Advocate, the headline in the Metro section, rushing to impeach Joe Biden would be suicide for House GOP. And this is written by Quinn Hillier, who's a Republican. Last night on CNN, James Carville said he almost did cartwheels, saying what a gift it would be if the Republicans went for impeachment. We know they don't have a two-thirds majority in the Senate. They don't have a majority at all. So why are they going through with something that, at the very best, would clear the House by a close margin, Mark?
Basically, it's because the Speaker does not have, he has a very thin majority. And a number of the very conservative Republicans, many members of the Freedom Caucus, have said that they want that having an impeachment going ahead of it with an impeachment would be their asking price for passing the appropriations bills that would keep the country from going into default at the end of the month. And or closing down, default's not the right word, I'm sorry. They closing down at the end of the month because they don't have the money to continue. So he is under a great deal of pressure to do that. At the same time, a lot of those Freedom Caucus people are saying, you know, that he, being McCarthy, has not been pushy enough as far as the impeachment goes, and that they may ask for him to be removed, Speaker McCarthy to be removed as Speaker. And so so he's kind of facing a lot of pressure from the conservative side.
Now, Jeff Landry has sent an email this morning, saying of his NRA endorsement for governor. By the way, Landry is a former congressman. He says, that's one heck of an endorsement. I'm so pleased to share that just like President Trump, the NRA has made its pick in the race. And here's what they have to say about our campaign. Jeff Landry's unwavering commitment to expanding and fiercely guarding the Second Amendment rights of law-abiding Louisianans is unparalleled. His ambition for Louisiana as an NRA constitutional carry state, coupled with his proven track record, makes our decision clear. And Landry says, this is quite an honor, and I'm particularly excited to share it with you because it's a significant one. So he's asking for a $30 donation with 30 days to go from his supporters. And in Louisiana, I would say that if you're a conservative running for governor, you get the NRA endorsement. That's probably a good thing, Mark.
Yes, the NRA is one of the crucial touchstones that you need to have if you're a conservative in Louisiana. Having the Trump endorsement probably is pretty good, too.
Yeah. Isn't that something? A listener asked, though, if Landry makes the runoff, will the other Republicans fall over all over themselves endorsing him against his opponent?
That's a good question. I'm not sure that all of them will. A number of them that see a future in the Republican Party will do so, remembering what happened with Scott Onshell. So, I mean, whether they support him or not, at least make the motions of doing so.
I would guess that if Stephen Wagasback does not make the cut, he will grin and bear it, and he will endorse Jeff Landry. We'll talk more with Mark and hear from Natalie Wexler after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. In a few moments, we'll hear from Natalie Wexler, an education authority. And she, of course, has a varied background, a lawyer who spent some time in Baton Rouge many years ago. We're wrapping it up with Mark Ballard, 30 days from the governor's election. And Mark is covering, for the first time in a generation, the election from the nation's capital. And a listener asked about members of our delegation. Some of them have endorsed. Do you think by the time October 14th rolls around, all of them will have made a public choice on this election?
I'm not sure we're going to see all of them make a public choice on this election. I mean, I would be surprised to see if Senator Kennedy comes up and just makes a choice on the election, at least prior to the primary. I'm not sure everybody will. Generally, after the primary, it'll be the Republicans for the Republicans, and Troy Carter will be for the Democrat.
Well, Bill Cassidy, he's another one who thought about running, didn't run. I'll be eager to see whether his endorsement of Jeff Landry has any impact on his future. But we discussed this, and a listener asked, has there been any pushback on the fact that Cassidy, who voted for the impeachment of former President Trump, endorses a guy who's loved a lot by Donald Trump.
Well, I think that Cassidy would tell you that these things, you know, that are different. I mean, that those are different issues. Him supporting Landry, who is, you know, has the backing and loves Donald Trump, you know, that is a different issue than whether or not he should vote on the impeachment. Then there's a big argument to be said that these endorsements don't really mean that much. So,
well, I don't think they mean as much as they might have, and maybe they've been overplayed through the years. But in a close race, it could mean a lot, and we'll see whether or not this one is close as we move toward the 14th of October and then a likely runoff on the 18th of November. We'll follow it every step of the way with Mark Ballard. Thank you, sir. It's always a pleasure to talk with you, Mark.
Thank you. Have a nice weekend.
You too.